no company has done more to put the smartphone at the center of our mobile connected lives.
Samsung tries to create new excitement with mobile phones. Will it work? It's Friday, February 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, ISIS makes its last stand in Syria. U.S. Democrats veer to the left for the 2020 elections. And designing the cities of the future. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Conditions in the Syrian city of Baghouz are bad and getting worse. ISIS fighters are trying to leave the area, leaving behind nearly 1,000 women and children. But nobody seems clear about what to do with the fighters who have surrendered or have been captured. VOA's Mario Ritter Jr. spoke with our Heather Murdoch, who is in Iraq and traveling to Baghouz, about conditions on the ground.
What I'm hearing from people who are on the ground in Baghouz right now in that area, that people are still coming out. Last night, it was believed that about 2,000 people were left in the areas where Islamic State militants are still fighting. Today, hundreds more people escaped and were transported up to a refugee camp. It is expected that, as you said, 1,000 people might be still in there or possibly more.
What have you heard about the condition of the people? How many are fighters? How many are family members?
The people who are left in the area where the militants are still fighting are either the militants themselves or probably their relatives, wives and children. The conditions for them, I would expect to be, and have been proven to be so far, very rough. They've been under siege for a long time. People come out of these kinds of fights often starving, always traumatized, and of course they will have a lot of children with them that will need immediate care if it's available.
Do you know whether the Syrian Democratic Forces are equipped to handle this influx?
Well, the conditions at the main camp, the Al-Hol camp, are reported to be wretched, and that's the main camp where people are going to right now. Over this winter, about 30 children died from hypothermia, according to WHO, and as the spring is starting to get warmer, they're also facing a very, very hot summer. So the extreme weather and a lack of food and fuel have also been reported. They don't have the resources to take care of this many people without more help.
Have you heard anything about repatriation, where women, children, and the fighters themselves come from other countries?
It seems to be a stalemate at the moment, where the Syrian Democratic Forces say they don't have the resources to hold about 700 fighters and thousands of women and children that are family members of these fighters that are all foreign. But most countries have said that they do not want to take these fighters back to try them in their home countries. Recently, or I think Wednesday night, there was a transfer of 150 Iraqis to Iraq from Syria, which has been the largest by far transfer of captured militants from one country to the next. But it's also believed that there may be tens of thousands more Iraqis held in Syria as militants.
Are you finding that most are actually from Iraq?
It's actually not clear who these Iraqis actually are, if they were captured recently or if they were captured any time in the past few years that they've been fighting Islamic State militants. So, no, I don't know if they came directly from Baghouz or if they have been held for a long time. The Syrian Democratic Forces have been holding foreign fighters for now. It's been going on a couple of years that they've been winning this battle and therefore taking in foreign fighters. It's come to a head recently because the forces are saying they can't afford to take care of all these people.
What do you know about the international presence there, NGOs or other organizations?
Well, there are support organizations across Syria, but they're very limited in terms of their access to certain areas because of the fighting. And they're also limited in resources. They usually just don't have enough of anything to go around. The war has been going on now for a long time, and there's certainly sympathy fatigue is what they call it among NGOs, where for so long there's been so many people suffering, it's hard to keep interest in international support for all of the different battle zones.
VOA's Heather Murdoch speaking from Iraq. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Malaysian authorities have charged a British national who had worked for former Prime Minister Najib Razak with two counts of money laundering. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan has authorized his military to immediately respond to any aggression against the country by India. China is facing challenges containing African swine fever in a nation that's the world's largest consumer of pork. And at least 69 people died in a huge blaze that tore through apartment buildings in an old part of the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. The Vatican's chief sexual crimes investigator says the Roman Catholic Church must break any code of silence over sexual abuse. And judging by his comments at a recent summit, the Pope agrees. Sabina Castelfranco has this report.
Prayers and the video testimonies of five unidentified sex abuse survivors from different continents opened the summit. Victims recounted their traumatic experiences. At a Vatican briefing following the opening session, Father Hans Zollner, president of the Center for the Protection of Minors, said the testimonies were brutal, honest, and nothing was spared. Archbishop Charles Scicluna of Malta, top sexual abuse investigator for the Vatican, said the voices they heard were emotional and powerful.
In order to understand the gravity of the situation, you need to listen to victims, meet them, because that is sacred ground.
The Pope summoned bishops from all over the world to come together to discuss what has become the most serious crisis and scandal of the Catholic Church, the sexual abuse perpetrated by members of the clergy. Pope Francis said the Church must listen to the cry of the little ones seeking justice. In his opening statement, Pope Francis told those gathered that the holy people of God are looking to us, expecting not simple and predictable condemnations, but concrete and effective measures to be undertaken. He stressed, "We need to be concrete." Philippines Cardinal Luis Tagle was the first to address the gathering of some 200 participants in the Vatican Synod Hall after the Pope. He choked up as he said that wounds have been inflicted by us, the bishops, on the victims.
Our lack of response to the suffering of victims, even to the point of rejecting them and covering up the scandal to protect perpetrators and the institution, has injured our people, leaving a deep wound in our relationship with those we are sent to serve.
Archbishop Scicluna, the next to address the gathering, said it is our duty to protect our people and to ensure justice when they are abused. He added, "We will protect them at all costs." Scicluna made clear that the Church must look carefully at how priests and bishops are chosen. He said the question of screening of future candidates for the priesthood remains of the essence. Ahead of the meeting, sex abuse survivors said they also want to see clergy found guilty of perpetrating or covering up abuse to be removed from their positions. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Happening now in Asia, stocks were mixed on Thursday. The Shanghai Composite slipped 0.34%, while the Shenzhen Composite declined 6%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index rose about 0.3% in the final hour of trading. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is the latest entrant into the increasingly crowded Democratic presidential field for 2020. Sanders and several other Democrats in the race advocate progressive views on key issues, such as the economy, the environment, and healthcare. In response, President Donald Trump charged that the Democratic Party is headed down the road of socialism, setting up what could be a major ideological debate next year. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
From Kamala Harris to Cory Booker to Elizabeth Warren, Democratic presidential contenders are getting voters fired up on the campaign trail.
We can win this fight! Dream big! Fight hard and win!
Trump is a danger for the future of our country.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, a self-described Democratic socialist, is the latest to join the Democratic field.
Our campaign is about creating a government and economy that works for the many, not just the few.
That progressive energy is also evident with new Democratic members of Congress, like New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, pushing a sweeping new environmental plan.
And I am so incredibly excited that we are going to transition this country into the future, and we are not going to be dragged behind by our past.
But the Democrats' emphasis on far-reaching plans for the environment, taxes on the wealthy, and expanding government health care programs is drawing fire from Republicans and from President Donald Trump on the campaign trail.
Yet there are those trying to implement socialism right here in the United States. So I again say to you, and I say it for the world to hear, America will never be a socialist country. Never, never.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the lively debate is all part of belonging to a broad party.
Welcome to the Democratic Party. We are not a rubber stamp for anybody. We are not a monolith. We never have been. And who would want to lead a party that would be described that way?
Democrats have long had a reputation for ideological splits and infighting, says analyst Larry Sabato.
The humorist Will Rogers said it best way back in the 1920s. He said, I belong to no organized political party. I'm a Democrat. And we're seeing that again. There are so many factions in the Democratic Party, and they're all being represented by a candidate or two or three.
Democratic voters will be looking for certain qualities as they choose a presidential nominee next year, says Elaine Kmark.
Kind of young and aggressive and can, you know, has enough gravitas, however, to deal with the challenges in front of the country. They're going to be looking at somebody who's really unlike Donald Trump.
But many Democrats will be most interested in finding a candidate who can beat the president, says Jim Kessler.
If a candidate goes too far left with a Bernie Sanders type agenda, I think that candidate is vulnerable to losing to Donald Trump. And I don't think that's where a lot of Democrats are substantively, and I don't think that's where they are politically.
Former Vice President Joe Biden and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, both centrists, could join the Democratic presidential field in the near future, ensuring a lively debate in the upcoming primaries. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Taiwan has proposed a draft law to allow same-sex marriage, but rights activists and conservative groups criticize the legislation, Asia's first such bill, amid a heated debate over marriage equality. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. Samsung has this week unveiled its newest line of smartphones. the top-selling smartphone maker in the world, hopes to inject excitement into a sluggish global smartphone market. VOA's Michelle Quinn attended the event in San Francisco on Wednesday and has this look.
The South Korean electronics company Samsung aims to inject excitement into the sluggish smartphone market. It unveiled a new form for smartphones, its foldable phone, called the Galaxy Fold.
The size of our screens is still fundamentally limited by the size of our devices, until now. With the Galaxy Fold, we're creating a new dimension for your phone and your life.
When closed, the Fold is a smartphone. When opened, the Fold turns into an expansive tablet. A user can use three apps at the same time. The Galaxy Fold is slated to go on sale in late April and will cost nearly $2,000. Samsung, the world leader in smartphone sales, also unveiled its new line of Galaxy smartphones, which it launched 10 years ago with the Android operating system.
No company has done more to put the smartphone at the center of our mobile connected lives.
The S10 comes in three models, S10e, S10, and the S10 Plus. The S10 has bigger screens, more battery life, and more cameras than past Galaxy phones. The firm will also sell an S10 for 5G, the new high-speed network being built now. The S10 has the world's first ultrasonic fingerprint scanner, which uses sound waves that bounce from a user's fingertip to unlock a device. And the phone can act as a charger for other devices. The S10 line will go on sale March 8th. As for the price, Samsung appears to be going after the high end of the market, where Apple dominates, with phones starting at $749. With its new line, Samsung says it is ushering in the next decade's new mobile era. But that remains to be seen. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
This news alert from VOA Asia. AccuWeather predicts the storm track that was active during the winter from the eastern Mediterranean to part of eastern Asia will continue well into the spring. Meanwhile, direct tropical impacts are predicted in a heavily populated area of the Indian Ocean. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a future of rising oceans and stronger storms awaits the next generation as the climate warms. It will take talented engineers and city planners to tackle those challenges. The annual Future City competition aims to get middle school students excited about learning the skills that they'll need. VOA's Steve Barragona was at the finals in Washington.
Florida South from the St. Hugh Catholic School at their Future City, Acadiana.
They came from across the country and as far away as China with a vision for the city of the future.
Our most beautiful part is our bridge, because we can make wind energy by this bridge, and our main transportation is used by this bridge.
The Future City competition puts young teens in charge of building a city that can respond to a challenge. This year's challenge, resilience after a natural disaster like an earthquake. The models must be built with recycled materials for less than $100.
The water collection system right here and the energy accumulator are actually part of a hairdryer. These two parts are actually contact lens holders.
But behind the whimsy is some serious engineering. Each group has to present its city's resilience features to the audience and a panel of judges.
The seawalls are made with concrete and steel to reduce the tidal wave's impact on the shoreline. The IDA satellite automatically activates the seawall hoisting system as it rises.
And it's about more than just infrastructure. Judges want to know that you've thought about your citizens, too.
If someone wants to build a mega tower that's 50 floors, we make an agreement like maybe 20 of them have to be low-income housing.
Engineering outreach group Discover E has run the competition for nearly three decades.
Then their underwater city, I read about this one.
Director of programs Thea Saar says it's an unorthodox but effective teaching tool. She tells of one boy who asked his teacher, when they would get back to the real learning.
You know, the kind where we're just sitting there reading the books and telling you the answers. And she said, well, what do you know about stormwater that you didn't know last week? What do you know about scale? What do you know about this? And you're having a really good time while you're doing it. And he goes, this is learning? I want to do more of this.
Central Pennsylvania.
The winners take home $7,500 for their school's science program and get a trip to a science-focused summer camp. This year's winners from Warwick Middle School in Pennsylvania say they also learned real-world skills like dealing with failure.
The hardest part was trying not to get frustrated when something didn't work, and I think our team members really contributed to that. So let's say one motor didn't work, we'd have to like start over, and it was...
Communication is key.
Yes, yes, indeed.
The lesson, when you're building a city, engineering is just part of the equation. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Finally today, the film Green Book, starring Mahershala Ali and Viggo Mortensen, is nominated for 5 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Supporting Actor. The story, set in the early 1960s, centers on an interracial friendship, but it also shows the discrimination that African Americans faced while traveling across the United States during the Jim Crow era, before civil rights reforms. Reporter Mike Osborne reports on an effort underway to document businesses that welcomed those travelers.
Scenes from The Green Book depict post-World War II America as a land of wide prosperity, happy families, big cars, and easy travel. But discriminatory laws of the time made it challenging, even dangerous, for black motorists to travel. They simply weren't welcome in most restaurants, hotels, or other businesses. So, enterprising New York City mail carrier Victor Green began publishing a travel guide listing businesses where black motorists were welcome. He called it the Negro Motorist Green Book, seen here in the New York Library's digital collection. Nashville, Tennessee once had dozens of listings in the Green Book. A team of historians, including Tiffany Moman, recently documented the sites statewide.
Just think about what that life meant, that you needed to have a guidebook to tell you how to get around a country where you were supposed to be equal, to tell you which establishments were friendly to you, and just to imagine what it was like to stop in a town that wasn't on the Green Book.
Most of Nashville's Green Book businesses were once located along or near Jefferson Street. To this day, Jefferson remains at the heart of the city's African-American community. But many Green Book sites were lost in 1957, when a federal highway was built right through the heart of the neighborhood. Others have been replaced by newer, more expensive homes and businesses in a process called gentrification. Some have new purpose. This nail salon was once a motel where black motorists could safely spend the night. In smaller towns, they stayed in private homes called guest houses, like this Green Book listed site in nearby Murfreesboro. Historian Gina Cannon says black motorists face discrimination nationwide.
Because usually segregation is thought of as a southern thing and a, you know, a southern problem. And really it was a national issue and one that we all need to understand and come to terms with and to do better in the future.
After completing their survey, the Tennessee Green Book team concluded that 8 out of 10 businesses no longer exist. One of the few Nashville Green Book sites still in business is Jefferson Street's R&R Liquor. Tiffany Moman hopes documenting the sites will aid efforts to preserve them.
We lose the stories of black businesses that through the Jim Crow era, through the era when the Green Book was published, persevered and survived and paved a way. And so the preservation of these sites is important so that we can continue to tell those types of stories.
Especially when those stories come at a time when the country is, again, wrestling with racial discord. Mike Osborne for VOA News, Nashville, Tennessee.
And this quick reminder, we will have live updates on Monday from the Oscar ceremony, so you want to stay tuned for that. Well, that's VOA Asia for today and for this week. Again, as always, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back again next week. We hope you will as well. And until then, have a great weekend.